Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
All I want this year is for you to dedicate your last breath to me before you bury yourself alive. Don't come home for Christmas.
I had no idea. Who was that? Was that Panic at the Disco? Did they do a Christmas album?
No. That's Fallout Boy.
Fallout Boy. Wow. I had no idea they did.
Mm-hmm. I didn't either.
I bet it was a moneymaker.
Oh, I bet.
I'm sure. Well, welcome back to Pensacola Morning News. I'm Alex Andrade, guest hosting for Andrew McKay this morning. We've run the gamut today. We've talked about, you know, how unfunny Andrew McKay is. We've talked about different Christmas traditions, including the fact that we've essentially imposed a Christmas tradition on the country of Germany. Who knew that the ancient German tradition of hiding a pickle in the Christmas tree that someone can find and get blessings for the year was actually just something that, you know, we as Americans made up to sell an overabundance of pickle ornaments, glass pickle ornaments by Woolworths back in the day. It is so popular in the United States that it actually got shipped back to Germany. We've also gone through an incredible number of Christmas puns. I don't know, John, are you feeling pine this morning?
Oh, boy. Yeah, feeling okay. Great.
Well, you know.
Doing good.
The correct answer would have been for sure. For sure, yes. We also talked about different foods that people eat. One listener texted in, we eat a lot of deer meat on Christmas. I come from a family of hunters. My grandmother cooks the best backstrap and gravy, but I love deer heart cut up in strips and fried. And actually, that sounds pretty good.
Interesting.
I grew up in South Florida, so we did not have a strong hunting tradition in my family.
Not much land.
not many places to shoot. I do love. There was a skeet and trap range in South Florida at a really large park in South Florida called Markham Park. So if you're familiar with South Florida, you're probably familiar with Markham Park. But the hunting I didn't really get into until college because there's like some public land around Gainesville. But you know, you would say that like once I got into that, it really spruced up my life. We have run the gamut this morning. We've talked about Medicaid fraud. We talked about Andrew's ability to do math on the air and just like ruin some people's drives to work that morning. Although he's right. You know, a lot of times Andrew is right. You know, you might not know it, but he is normally right.
That well, don't feed his head like that. No, don't.
Well, he never seems right.
Okay.
Like there's that difference, right? Like there's nobody that is more right who comes off wrong as well as Andrew McKay in the mornings. But I do love listening to the show. Fun fact, I am a state representative.
Fun fact.
I'm not just a Christmas tradition enthusiast and an enthusiast for Bible Christmas trivia, but I do serve in the Florida legislature. I got elected in 2018. I've been the chair of our transportation and economic development budget, so overseeing things like DOT and our National Guard and highway safety and motor vehicles. And for the last year, I've overseen our healthcare budget, the largest segment of our budget, about $44 billion worth of our budget, and it's been a lot of fun.
Wow. Unfortunately,
I've also, you know, discovered things about misuse of funds or the mismanagement of funds, and it's been the most unique year in office this past year. But
I can only imagine.
But yeah, I mean, if you have questions about Medicaid, our Medicaid program in the state, different managerial styles, if you have questions about any kind of like the disputes that you've seen covered between the legislature and the governor, please feel free to text or call in. The number is 850-437-1620. If you have other Christmas traditions, you know, or better puns than I've said on air so far, or other Christmas myths, please feel free to call in or text in. The number is 850-437-1620. I appreciate the time that I've been given this morning. It is really a unique experience being able to host for Andrew McKay, and there's nothing that will humble you more and make you realize how tough of a job he has than trying to fill 4 hours worth of content.
Mm-hmm.
Even with like the first hour, like filled by like a replay.
People don't realize the amount of prep that he actually does.
Oh, he's the only person that watches every single local government board, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like I was an attorney for a local government board. and like, you couldn't pay me enough to watch every other local government board video.
Right.
Yeah, you know, just even the ones that I was in. But we'll be right back with Traffic on the Fives.
That's right. We got Traffic on the Fives brought to you by Knox Pest Control. Their family serving your family since 1929. For information on a free pest or termite quote, visit KnoxPest.com. Knox knocks them out. Well, we've got an accident right now at Fairfield and Pace Boulevard. Not seeing any delays associated with that one. And let's see here. That's one more. Navarre Parkway and Granada Street over in Navarre. No road blockage associated with that. I'm John Pickens with your Traffic on the Fives.
When you were 18, you spent your spring break in Cancun. The party was legendary, and you speak of it often, even though you don't remember half of it. The geeky kid who sat across from you in math class stayed home, practicing calculus. You made fun of her. A lot. That is, until last year, when you owed the IRS a lot of money and called the certified public accountants at Benakis & Associates. And she answered the phone. Who's laughing now? The number crunchers at Benakis & Associates live and breathe accounting and tax preparation. It's practically in their DNA. When you need to know what the heck a Form 656-PPV is, call Benakis & Associates. When you need a QuickBooks Pro advisor, call Benakis & Associates. When you need someone who practices long division for fun, call Benakis & Associates. Now in the historic district on 120 South Alkanes and online at flacpas.com. Benakis & Associates. Leave the numbers to the experts.
As a business owner, you've got a lot on your plate. Managing staff, growing your business, training new hires, and more. With so much going on, you need Avalon. As an IRS-certified PEO, Avalon HR can help. From running your payroll, remitting state and federal taxes, workers' compensation insurance, employee benefits, and our HR expertise. Avalon HR lets you focus on your core business while we handle the rest. Employing made easy. AvalonHR.com.
Rudolph, with your nose so bright, won't you guide my sleigh tonight?
It will be an honor, sir.
Hi, I'm Tom DeFranco with DeFranco Gas, thanking all our customers for a great year. We'd like to wish you and yours a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year from all of us at DeFranco Gas.
Your beard doesn't have one of those things that goes over your ears.
Well, that's because it's real, just like I'm really Santa Claus.
This is Chris Bryan, host of Pensacola Right Now, wishing you a happy Hanukkah, a Merry Christmas, and a Happy New Year.
Welcome back to Pensacola Morning News, guest hosted by me, Alex Andrade, filling in for Andrew McKay this week on this bright and beautiful Monday morning. It's a little overcast, actually. I was being a little facetious. So I serve in the Florida legislature. I have since 2018. John just asked a question that I think some folks might want to know. When you serve in the Florida legislature, one, you're supposed to serve and treat it like a part-time job. It doesn't pay like a full-time job necessarily. And you're supposed to live in your district. You have to actually live in your district to be qualified for it and spend the majority of your time in your district. So I myself have a day job. The vast majority of other people in the Florida legislature have day jobs. And so the question was, where do you live over in Tallahassee?
Right.
I don't own a place. Some people, you know, buy a place, but, you know, I didn't know if I would serve 8 years or 2 years when I started out. So what I do is, I do rent essentially month to month with, a couple other legislators and we just like rented a house. So during football season in Tallahassee, we have to completely pack out the house when we leave during committee weeks because the same house is used on the weekends for people to come in, watch football games, to attend FSU football. Maybe like less so this past year. I don't think they had a great season, although I'm not really one to talk since I'm a huge Gator fan. But
you got a new coach.
We got a new coach.
He can now officially start coaching Florida.
Yeah, he coached his final game against Ole Miss. Mm-hmm. John and Tulane, they did not prevail.
No, they did not.
Ole Miss's new coach, though, what's his name? Golden?
Yep, Golding.
Golding. Todd? No.
No, Pete.
Pete Golding. First game.
Man, what a coaching debut in the SEC.
Yeah, playoff win.
Put that on your resume.
Yeah.
Look where my very first win was.
You know, there's a I wish I could say that I've been following the playoffs so far. I know Oklahoma-Alabama had a pretty interesting game. Oklahoma came out strong, and then Alabama just managed to, you know, claw their way back from a 17-point mm-hmm. deficit. Yeah, I wish I knew more about the college football landscape right now, but as a Gator fan, I pretty much checked out. You know, I was on the sidelines for games in like 07 and 08 when Tebow was there. I was a cheerleader there at Florida for a while, and I used to get really into it, but I was there for Urban Meyer, and then Will Muschamp, and then Jim McElwain, Dan Mullen. I've seen all these coaches since I've been there. You know, hopeful for Summerall, but we'll see. You know, I think the big thing for him is he seems to have the self-awareness about what Gator fans accept and want to see. But I'm not sure until, you know, games start getting played next year if he's got the ability yet. I mean, like, it looks like he did a great job at Tulane. I mean, they were, you know, ranked. They won their conference championship. They made it to the playoffs, so.
But then this is the SEC.
Yeah.
Whole different.
It's different.
Whole different beast.
It's different. It just means more.
It does. I like that.
It just means more. Just means in more. The SEC. One of the cool things is Laura Rutledge, if you're an SEC fan. Laura Rutledge, the commentator, she does a lot with Paul Feinbaum and Tebow on the SEC Network and stuff. She was actually a bridesmaid in our wedding.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she was. So she was in the same sorority as my wife, Jessica. And the other weird small fact is that Aaron Andrews was in the same sorority years before they were.
Really?
So apparently this, you know, sorority at UF just puts out great football sports.
I guess so.
John, Andrews sometimes does do Democrat or Republican bills filed. Mm-hmm. That question. I was like nervous about if I could do that without coming off somehow insulting.
Right.
So we're just going to try it. We're going to wait.
Okay. All right.
So the first bill that we're going to discuss is House Bill 187, the Florida Public Service Commission bill. It essentially expands the Public Service Commission, requires them to add additional appointees with certain expertise, and also requires them to provide more robust reporting before a investor-owned an IOU utility, an investor-owned utility, can get a rate adjustment. Do you think that bill was filed by a Republican or a Democrat?
I want to say Democrat.
You might think that, but it was actually me.
Really?
I filed that bill alongside Don Gates in the Senate.
I was just thinking expanding government, but then, you know, you put in that last part. But I didn't think about that.
Well, the weird thing with utilities is it's a government authorized monopoly, right? So, mm-hmm. And it's been that way for 100 years. The idea behind the monopoly was you needed those economies of scale to allow these companies to actually provide power to every inch of the state. I don't know if that was right or wrong. There's examples across the country where, like, Texas has, like, opened up their market to mm-hmm. essentially, like, inject competition between power companies. However, there's no real evidence that, like, that's actually driven down costs. Like, Texas power rates are about the same as Florida's. And then Texas also has some significant vulnerabilities in their grid, largely because, like, no single company is responsible for the grid. Because when you're competing on a power company, like you're competing on the power generation, not necessarily maintenance of the grid. So if there's no one single central point of responsibility for maintaining the grid now in certain parts, you have those situations where Texas had those massive blackouts.
Yes.
So there's positives and negatives. I'm not beholden to one, you know, concept or the other. I just don't see the evidence to change. And a lot of times it does feel somewhat unfair. It's like with our criminal statutes, like, you know, we have some criminal statutes on the books that were not put there, you know, with the best evidence. But then what's the justification to change? What's the evidence backing up your change? And so a lot of times as a legislator, it's tough to figure out. But more on that with after some traffic on the fives.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I was really engulfed in that one. Okay. So no accidents to report to you right now. Looks like I-10, I-110, 2990. I'm not seeing any delays this morning. John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Sorry, John.
No, go ahead. What's our next bill?
The next bill, House Bill 389, Smoking in Public Places, essentially prohibits the smoking of marijuana products in public. Republican or Democrat?
I think it's Republican.
Yes, also me.
I'm like, okay, now wait a second, because
you're sensing a theme. The only safe way for me to play this game was me to only do my bills.
Oh, I gotcha. So what does this bill entail?
Okay, so if you saw last week on the news when President Trump reduced the schedule of marijuana products from like a Schedule 1 to, I think, a Schedule 3 narcotic, what that does is essentially allow for the treatment of marijuana like how we treat oxycodone or OxyContin. Okay, so Schedule 1 narcotics, the definition of a Schedule 1 is a narcotic that has significant instances of abuse that also has no recognized medical benefit. So even if you're not a marijuana fan, in Florida, constitutionally, our Florida Constitution recognizes there's a medical benefit to marijuana. Unfortunately, because of the how the federal government had scheduled it as a Schedule 1, we couldn't treat it like a medical product that had any benefit at all. We couldn't acknowledge, in relation to the federal government, any medical benefit. I'm not saying there's a dramatic medical benefit. The science is pretty clear that like THC and components of marijuana that may have some medicinal benefit really don't have the same benefit at higher concentrations. It's pretty low concentrations of THC that have any scientifically backed basis for any kind of medical benefit. However, at least now we can treat it like OxyContin and oxycodone.
Mm-hmm.
We can do studies that can be reported. Our medical marijuana companies can operate a little bit more like actual medical companies. And it'll just allow for more transparency more than anything else. This isn't the creation of recreational, but it is, you know, a treatment of it more rationally, I'd say. But the big concern, the big harp on Amendment 3 that everybody had was we don't want to be smelling marijuana everywhere. And I mean, I was sitting outside at Hub Stacy's last night before we went to the Blue Wahoos, you know, with, you know, my two kids and our friends. And I mean, there was a big van that passed by and then there was a cloud that just sat there.
Yeah.
It is tough to get away from it. The smell is noticeable.
Oh, yeah. You can pick it out.
Like we noticed the same smell at gallery night on Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it'll linger.
Oh, yes, it will.
So the bill is designed essentially to address the big gripe about marijuana so that, you know, there's a bright line rule or regulation that can be pointed to as the justification to stop somebody from consuming in public to try and address the smell issues that I think are the universal concern that most people have. Just because I, as a legislator, I mean, I've been in the legislature since 2018. I'm frustrated with our debate because we're trying to accommodate our constitutional amendment that allows for it as medical use. And at the same time, constantly combat all these debate and discussion about recreational.
Right.
It gets frustrating. So yeah. This will hopefully allow for a more rational conversation.
Good. Yeah. So yeah, I really like that. I really do. I'll get behind you on that one.
We'll see. I don't know if it'll pass or not. I have no idea. The biggest rule that you have as a legislator is don't get married to your bills. And I have internalized that to the point where I will shoot my own bill in the head and kill it if I'm not comfortable with the product at the end of session.
Right.
So
now, do you write the language in the bill yourself?
Oftentimes, yeah. Yes. Sometimes no.
Okay.
Bills can come from any like lobbyists obviously draft bills, other, you know, professional like other like groups will draft bills. Mm-hmm. But,
and they'll like put them in front of you.
Yeah. And say, do you agree? Disagree? You want to file it, sponsor it. You know, I do have some bills that I've drafted, but like my public records bill that I filed, I worked on that with the First Amendment Foundation. So I didn't draft it. I've had input on it before I filed, but no, bills come from any number of sources. It's a collaborative process.
Gotcha. Yeah. That's right. It's News Radio 92.3. We'll be back. David's got Fox News and local news coming up next.
I'm Therese Crowley. U.S. Coast Guard turned Ghostbusters, hunting a third Venezuelan ghost tanker.
A U.S. official says this third oil tanker is on the U.S. sanctions list, adding it's flying a false flag and is under a judicial seizure order. It's unclear at this time if the vessel has been boarded, but it comes after the U.S. Coast Guard, with the help of the Department of War, seized a second oil tanker off the coast of Venezuela.
Fox's Madeline Rivera. This also threatens Cuba's oil supply. President Trump doing Christmas week at Mar-a-Lago. Democrats back off talk of impeachment for the holidays, instead targeting Attorney General Pam Bondi for failing to release all the Epstein files by Friday's deadline. High in the Rhode Island skies, what's that? Air traffic control audio of a commercial pilot reporting a silver canister floating feet from his plane. Air traffic control couldn't spot it, called it creepy. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 8:31 at News Radio 92.3. We've got 63 degrees right now. Cloudy skies here in Pensacola. We'll get to that full forecast with Brooke Richardson and Channel 3 in just a few minutes. The Sheriff's Office in Okaloosa County investigating a fatal shooting Saturday night in Mary Esther. Deputies say they responded to a 911 call about 10 o'clock that night, reporting a person down on Canoha Drive off of Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. Deputies discovered a deceased female at a residence, and investigators are currently working to determine the circumstances. So far, no suspects have been identified. Also, a 44-year-old Pensacola man facing a homicide charge after a shooting just over a week ago in Escambia County. Alex Hines was arrested on Friday. He's charged with negligent manslaughter and a weapons offense. He's being held without bond. Deputies responded to a call last Saturday of an armed disturbance at Brees Lane. That's where they found a man with a gunshot wound to the face. The victim later died from complications at the hospital. The sheriff's office says investigators linked Hines to a Bronco that was captured on video surveillance near the shooting. The vehicle was seen about 37 seconds before the 911 call was made. Investigators in Santa Rosa County looking into the robbery of a Tom Thumb gas station on Willard Norris Road. That happened on Saturday. Heavy law enforcement presence was reported at the time as deputies searched for the suspect. The Sheriff's Office Major Crimes Unit is now investigating. No suspects have been arrested as of yet. Florida Highway Patrol looking into a fatal crash on Blue Angel Parkway in Escambia County. That happened last night. Troopers say 33-year-old Alexander King was driving northbound when his vehicle crossed the center line and hit two southbound vehicles. A passenger in one of those vehicles was pronounced dead at the scene. 33-year-old King is charged with DUI manslaughter. He remains in the Escambia jail without bond. Well, Barnes & Noble planning to open 60 new brick-and-mortar stores across the U.S. next year. The bookstore is planning locations here in Florida, in Georgia, Ohio, Texas, Illinois, Colorado, Washington State, Washington, D.C., California, Virginia. All of those being opened between now and June, and the locations of those new stores have not been released as of yet. As of now, they've got 45 stores in Florida, including a location on Airport Boulevard in Pensacola. Senator Rick Scott wants to eliminate the special tax-exempt status of a group that he is accusing of having ties to terrorism. Scott introduced a bill last week targeting the Council on American Islamic Relations, or CARE. He wrote on X yesterday that CARE identifies as a charity, and he says they're known for having ties to terrorist activity.
It is 8:35 at News Radio, 92.3, cloudy, 65 degrees right now. Forecast up in just a second, but first, let's get a look at our traffic on the fives with John Pickens.
That's right. No accidents to report to you right now. Taking a look at I-10, I-110. Not seeing any delays this morning. Just a minor one if you are on Highway 29, both northbound and southbound, approaching 9 Mile Road. Seeing about a 2-minute delay in that area. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
We are looking at some clouds with some light sprinkles as you go through the morning hours. Should clear up as you head into your afternoon with some partly cloudy skies, high near 72 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 55 degrees. Heading into Tuesday, mostly sunny skies, high near 71. Tuesday night, temperatures dropping near 56. Heading into your Christmas Eve forecast, looking at some fog for the morning with temperatures getting into the 70s for your afternoon with mostly sunny skies. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. 64 with cloudy skies right now. Your next news in 30 minutes and breaking news anytime. And your money now this morning, taking a look at our markets as of the opening bell. The Dow's up just over 0.3% at 48,298.57 this morning, just under 0.5% up for the S&P 500 at 68,61.97. About 0.4% at 23,398.56 for the NASDAQ up right now. Looking at the 10-year bond rate, it's up a bit, 4.16%. Gold prices are up 73.50 at 44.60.80. Silver's up $1.45 at 68.94 this morning. Bitcoin down over 1.5% at 89,746.40. Taking a look at some of those financial headlines for today. Blue Origin celebrating a first. NBC's Valerie Castro says it came during yesterday's launch from West Texas, their ninth flight of the year.
33-year-old Michaela Benthaus, an engineer from Germany, becoming the first wheelchair user in space, floating inside the capsule and looking down on Earth, emerging triumphantly after a 10-minute flight.
And Benthaus and her five crewmates reached an altitude of about 62 miles before the crew capsule safely parachuted back to Earth. Well, average gas prices nationwide down a nickel a gallon from last week. AAA reporting the average price at $2.85 a gallon, down 22 cents from 1 month ago. The highest average price in Hawaii, it's at $4.42 a gallon. The cheapest gas in the nation is in Oklahoma at $2.29. Lawyers for Google and Apple are warning their workers to stay in America if they'll need a visa stamp to get back in the U.S. Business insiders viewed the warnings that were drafted by law firms working for the tech companies. This comes amid reports that hundreds of Indian professionals have seen their U.S. embassy appointments canceled or postponed due to social media vetting. 8:38, our next news at 9, breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Hi, this is Todd Thompson, President and CEO of the Greater Pensacola Chamber of Commerce. Tune in to the Pensacola Expert Panel for the Chamber Connection Show that will keep you informed on what's going on with your Chamber of Commerce. Tune in this Monday morning at 10 to find out about our upcoming events, all of our different programs, and what's happening with our local business community. It's the Chamber Connection Show every other Monday at 10 on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Here are the News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 contest rules. You can win one prize per household per contest in any 30-day period, unless specified by individual contest rules. All prizes on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 are non-transferable, non-redeemable for cash, or exchangeable for any other prize. News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 prizes must be redeemed within a 30-day period of winning. For a complete list of rules, visit newsradio923.com.
Hi, this is Howard Seaton, marketing consultant with ADX Communications, wishing everyone a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And remember, Santa, it's easier to come through a front door than down a chimney.
Hi, this is Kevin King, operations manager here at Kent Country 98.7, News Radio 92.3, ESPN Pensacola, and Pensacola's Playlist 94.5. I hope you have a warm and safe Christmas time. Thank you for your support of our radio stations in 2025, and I hope you have a great 2026.
Silver and gold, silver and gold. Everyone wishes for silver and gold.
Welcome.
How do you measure?
Good morning to everyone tuning in. This is Alex Andrade filling in for Andrew McKay here on Pensacola Morning News. If you want to weigh in or text or call, the phone number is 850-437-1620. When we last were speaking, we were talking about the concern about the smell of marijuana smoke, especially as, you know, marijuana is getting treated differently now by the Trump administration. It's still a controlled substance. It is not, President Trump did not do anything to make it more recreational. He simply put it on the same scale as things like OxyContin and oxycodone, which I think most everybody is aware, while it can be prescribed, still has significant instances of abuse and can cause harm. It's just also recognized as having some medical benefit. That's pretty much now how the federal government's treating marijuana. And some person did weigh in on this bill that I'd filed to try and address the smell of marijuana smoke in public. And they said, if the biggest issue is smell of marijuana, why not put research into engineering the smell out? Well, the good news is that because the federal government has now scheduled it as a Schedule 3 narcotic and no longer a Schedule 1 narcotic, studies like that can be legally done. And you can have scientists across the country collaborating and studying out in the open without fear of, you know, necessarily any kind of like federal entity coming in and disrupting, you know, a study like this. So maybe we will have some brilliant engineers figure out how to make it a less offensive smell in the future. But John, you did mention or ask like how people think of how a bill becomes a law. We have two chambers in the legislature. We have a House and the Senate. The House is made up of 120 elected officials. The Senate's made up of 40. So for a bill, any number of bills that I file to become a law, I first got to decide on language myself and decide I'm going to file a bill. I either draft it myself or a lobbyist or a special interest group or a constituent will bring a bill language that I agree with and want to file. I'll file that bill. And then I'll have to find a Senate sponsor to file that or a similar bill on the Senate side. And then once those bills are filed, they'll get assigned to, you know, let's say three committees. So two subcommittees and then one big committee, right? Like, so if it's a healthcare bill, it'll be assigned to like two healthcare subcommittees, like facilities subcommittee or the profession subcommittee in healthcare. Then it'll come to a much larger committee called the healthcare committee. And if it passes all three of those committees, which it might not, it'll then make its way to the House floor. For that bill to still become a law, even if it passes the House floor, it has to go through the same process in the Senate. So a senator has to file that same bill, has to go through its own committee process for it to make it to the Senate floor. If I pass a bill off the House floor and send it to the Senate, and my Senate companion never made it through one committee or all of its committees, the Senate won't take it up. So you really need a good bill with good language. You need to be confident that it's going to move through the process on the Senate side the same way it's going to move through on the House side. And then hopefully the language is similar enough when it reaches the floor to where when I send it over to the Senate, the senators will take it up on the Senate floor and pass my language or vice versa. Hopefully I'm satisfied enough with the Senate version of the bill that when they send it from the Senate floor to the House, I'm comfortable taking it up and passing it. You can amend it on the House and the Senate floor. Say like, I'm, you know, not happy with the Senate's version of the bill that I moved through the process. I can amend it on the House floor, but what that means is I have to then send it back to the Senate to vote on. So ultimately throughout that whole process, the goal is for both the House, the full House and the full Senate to vote on the identical language. Because if they do not do that, it does not ever pass and get sent to the governor for signature or veto. So that's why you always hear about like there's like 3,000 or 4,000 bills filed every year and only a few hundred pass. Because the process is pretty complex and pretty weighty.
Seems like it takes a long time, too. You know, it takes considerable amount of time.
Yeah. I mean, so we have generally about five what are called committee weeks where we meet as committees before our session, which is a 2-month session. So mm-hmm. all of this activity has to happen between the 5 weeks before session and the 2 months during session. And so, yeah, it is a pretty short time frame. You mm-hmm. got to especially be proactive on the front end because if your bills aren't moving by that second week of session on either side, it gets tougher and tougher for them to pass. So more on the legislative process after Traffic on the Fives.
That's right. Let's see here. No accidents to let you know about. I-10, I-110, everything is flowing smoothly. I'm not seeing any delays to slow you down. I'm John Pickens with your Traffic on the Fives. We were talking about earlier about bills that that you have. So
Yeah, John.
Yeah. Republican. I'm just going to give you the answer.
Yeah, so I was nervous about doing the Andrew McKay, you know, did a Republican or a Democrat file this bill? Because I was afraid I would offend somebody. so the safest thing for me to do was just to talk about my own bills. So House Bill 437 related to public records. John, Democrat or Republican?
Oh, that's Republican.
Yes.
It made me think about it.
It was me. Yours truly.
Yours truly.
This bill, I've already gotten some phone calls from like some local government representatives across the state about it. If you are familiar with our public records process in Florida, we're supposed to have this robust public records process where any member of the public can ask a city, a county, the state government for records, and within a reasonable, in air quotes, amount of time, get those records. And you know, if there's a cost associated with compiling those public records and producing them, then a reasonable cost. Unfortunately, what we've seen over the past, say, decade is a dwindling and a deteriorating of the enforceability of the Public Records Act. And so what this bill does is adds a little bit of teeth to this process to where when I ask for a public record from a local government or a state agency, they have to respond in good faith within 3 days and tell me maybe how much time it's going to take to produce these records, how many records we're talking about, and the potential public record exemptions that might apply, right? It's because there are some public records that have statutory exemptions, right? Like, you know, I can think especially of things like police reports and police body cam footage. Those things, oftentimes, like someone has to review them for privacy issues. A lot of times you can't show a victim's face on the body cam footage. That has to be redacted out, pulled out. Same with police reports. Oftentimes the victim has to get redacted or pulled out. But 3 days is a reasonable amount of time for someone from an agency to at least respond and say, we think it's going to take this long. This is probably how much it's going to cost. And these are the exemptions that normally would apply based on requests like this.
Now, is there going to be anything in the bill that says, just using an example that happened, that they produce the public records?
Well, so there's an element in there where if I'm forced to sue that entity, if they never mm-hmm. produce the record, they cannot then in litigation cite to some exemption that they hadn't cited before, right? So like,
okay.
They have to respond in good faith, like to actually try and comply with the law on the front end. If they, in the event they get sued, they then want to raise a bunch of defenses.
Mm-hmm.
The whole idea is to try and force the issue before litigation so that folks aren't forced to essentially sue or threaten to sue just to get their records produced.
Mm-hmm.
And that's become a problem across the board, local governments and state governments alike in Florida. More and more of them have been just thumbing their nose at the Public Records Act.
Right.
So the whole point is we should have good faith conversations. And that's the main gist of it. The final bill I have is House Bill 593. And keep in mind, House members get 7 bills. We've talked about 4 so far. I have 5 filed, but this 4th bill that we're talking about is the Government Agencies and Personnel a bill related to government agencies and personnel, essentially saying it is a crime against the state for a state agency to divert any settlement money that's owed to the state to any third party other than the state.
What a great idea. I mean, I don't know who would ever, you know, do anything like that.
Anybody with a fiduciary responsibility saying they're there to safeguard the taxpayer dollar and represent the state in their best interest, I'd be shocked if anybody would ever divert settlement money owed to the state to any third parties.
Yeah, that makes no sense.
Right. Yeah. So this, the language of this bill essentially says that, it is actually a crime against the state for you to violate your fiduciary duty and divert funds owed to the state. I think it's pretty straightforward and simple on that front. It's got some other language from a bill that DeSantis vetoed last year related to, say, fundraising in your official capacity. Like, you cannot be a government employee on the government dime in a government building fundraising for political purposes. I happen to think that's wrong.
Yeah.
Crazy.
I know.
But Governor DeSantis did veto this bill last year. So we will see if that language, along with the additional language, somehow gets passed. But again, I mean, if he wants to veto something about the settlement diversion money, I'd love for him to explain why.
Well, it's 8:50 right here at News Radio 92.3. We'll be back in just a second.
Anderson Subaru sharing more than ever during the 2025 Subaru Share the Love event. Buy a new Subaru now through January 2nd, and Subaru will donate $250 to your choice of four nationally recognized charities: the ASPCA, Make-A-Wish, Meals on Wheels, or the National Park Foundation. Or choose our local charity, the Pensacola Breast Cancer Association, and Anderson Subaru will add an extra $200 to Subaru's donation with 0.9% financing for 72 on 2025 Outback models, 1.9% financing for 48 on 2025 Forester models, and 1.9% financing for 72 on new Crosstrek models. It's never been easier to share the love. So far, we've donated over $200,000 to fight breast cancer in Pensacola. At Anderson Subaru, now through January 2nd. Anderson Subaru, Highway 29, just north of Car City, Pensacola, online at AndersonSubaru.com.
Anderson's got a Subaru for you.
$250 donation for new purchase or lease. Promotion ends January 2nd. See retailer or AndersonSubaru.com/share. For details.
Splash Magazine covers the coast like the Gulf of Mexico. Each month, Splash Magazine offers a calendar of events, plus tips on where to shop, dine, and play. Learn about the month's special events, live entertainment, and interesting local people. Learn how to catch fish with Captain Dave Yelverton. See what is worth watching on your streaming services. Tom Nolan will tell you the latest. Get the most out of the Emerald Coast by reading Splash Magazine each month. For more information, call Gulf Breeze News at 850-932-8986 or visit GulfBreezeNews.com online.
Here's what's happening around Pensacola this week. Saturday, take in the Palafox Market from 9 till 2, rain or shine. Pick up winter farm produce, plants, flowers, freshly made and baked foods, and one-of-a-kind items from the crafters who make them. The market is all up and down Palafox. The spirit of the holiday rings in downtown Pensacola as Winterfest continues. Enjoy the sights and sounds of the season. See visitpensacola.com for more. Submit your events at newsradio923.com.
Hi, this is David Wayne, and I just want to wish you and your family a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
From all of us to all of you, Merry Christmas.
Bells will be ringing the glad, glad news.
All right, welcome back for the last few minutes of Pensacola Morning News. I'm Alex Andrade filling in for Andrew McKay on this Monday morning before Christmas. We've covered the gamut on so many different topics, John.
We really have.
It's been a very eclectic, a very eclectic morning, from, you know, Christmas puns to Christmas Bible trivia to Medicaid fraud.
How I know.
To my loving and mutually respecting relationship with Governor DeSantis. Our Attorney General James Uthmeyer, to how to pass a bill in the Florida legislature.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking right before we went off about some of the activities in the legislature, and somebody wrote in, while the action on pot from President Trump seems sensible, President Trump is doing so many things by executive order. What happens in 3 years when we have a new Democrat president? And the point that listener is making is a point well taken. My biggest gripe, if you heard me, I think in like the 6 a.m. hour, was politicians, elected officials, people in positions of public trust who say the ends justify the means. This isn't a criticism of the executive orders that President Trump is doing, but the concern about like tit for tat, goose, what's good for the goose is good for the gander is always a concern. It should be for someone in a position of public trust, because your main priority after representing the citizens that put you in office appropriately should be is protecting the institution, not necessarily protecting, you know, the problems with an institution, but like maintaining the institution. I want to leave the state of Florida better than I found it. I want to leave the legislature in a better position than I found it. And I don't want to abuse my position and then just like point at the scoreboard as justification for why I say, like, you know, funnel $10 million from a Medicaid settlement to my own PAC. Because in that circumstance, there's nothing stopping a Democrat in that same position from funneling settlement money to their own PAC to say, support the abortion amendment next time. There's nothing stopping them if we don't say this is wrong. And so I know the majority of folks who have looked into the issue on this Hope Florida money that got uncovered, agree that, you know, it's wrong. Regardless of what they used the money for, it was wrong. There are still a lot of folks who say scoreboard. They've just pointed the scoreboard. Amendment 3 failed, so we won. It's fine. It's not fine, especially if you look at somewhere like Minnesota. Like, John, you were mentioning earlier how scary it is, just how much Medicaid fraud is being uncovered and how little oversight there's been. With the billions, I think I saw, what is it, like $14 billion?
Something like that. Yeah, it was crazy.
Like, an amount of money larger than the GDP of Somalia.
Wow.
You know?
Right.
And it was, you know, this very strong political minority in Minnesota, and, you know, Somali refugees who apparently were being, you know, part of some major scam to like defraud the Medicaid program in Minnesota, siphon off billions of dollars from our Medicaid program, and then send their family overseas. That issue becomes less surprising when you realize how little oversight we have in our Medicaid programs, even in the state of Florida. Like, I'm not saying that that type of fraud is happening in Florida. We're not a Medicaid expansion state. But when you actually look at the oversight we apply to the companies that manage our Medicaid program, because remember, it's no longer the state managing Medicaid. Like, we're no longer the ones paying physicians directly for the vast majority of our Medicaid program. We have these private companies, these Fortune 50 massive companies that are between the state as the client now and the patient. And they're the ones who are supposed to be managing the care, coordinating the care for the people that are on our Medicaid program. We really have no oversight of how they're operating. And we don't collect the data to really oversee it. So, you know, when you see the trend lines of these companies, and this isn't just a Florida issue, it's a national issue. A lot of these companies also provide private products. They're not nearly making the same profit on their private products as they are on their state products, their state-governed Medicaid products.
Right.
And that's a concern. That means that there's something going on that we're not catching it as the government, that is profit-making for these companies. And there's also very little incentive for these companies who make their money on a percentage of the revenue that they spend on medical care. There's no really incentive for them to save money on medical care or to focus on preventative care that is potentially cheaper. If you're generating a percentage of revenue as your profit, well, of let's say 15% of $1.5 billion is a lot more than 15% of $800 million.
You're right.
You know, and so those are the types of incentives where you say there's no one's a bad actor in this system. It's just, we as the legislature, we as the state government need to do a better job of recognizing incentives and realigning them closer to how the private market's been able to, you know, pinch and save money on medical care. No one is saying our Medicaid product results in better healthcare outcomes even than our private insurers do. I'm sure a lot of people have problems with their private insurance companies as well, but ultimately, I mean, the incentives are there for increased costs in the space. And also we don't have good financial oversight at all. I mean, to the point where we don't know how much, you know, there's one well-known company, that bought another company that's well-known. Let's just say like Aetna and CVS. we as a state, like, we never bothered collecting the information to know just how much Medicaid money was being spent on CVS products by Aetna. And we never bothered asking.
Right.
It's not Aetna's fault.
Right.
It's our fault as the state. We just never bothered inquiring to know just how much money was being made by the same company on the provision of medical services. So we have work to do. If you do pray, please pray for some wisdom and discernment as I go in my last legislative session on this topic. Thank you guys so much for this morning. Have a great week.
Local news every hour and